problem with this. The Oak Tree Seminar, I think that's what you call it, workbook, has about 40 pages on this, and it's really, really excellent. And it was my first exposure to the Sarton methodology, and if you read that thing over once in a while, it kind of keeps your head screwed on straight, because you can find yourself drifting away from... I notice that many times when I find myself making a lot of mistakes, it's not that I'm getting careless, it's that I'm forgetting what I'm there for. And I go back and I reread that and think it through again, and it seems to pull me back. It helps a lot. And I highly recommend it. It's not at all technical. It doesn't tell you how to make any adjustments or anything. It tells you how to adjust your head, and many times that's infinitely more important.
How do you turn this around?
Well, the process we call it in therapeutic work is reparenting. What you have to do is re-examine parental messages and how they are affecting you, and determining whether your symbiotic relationship with the mother image or the parent image is really dependent upon you punishing yourself, and whether they really care, especially if they're dead. If they're alive now, you should... If your mother's alive, go to your mother and talk with her. Tom Brohammer's mother, I know her, and she gave him no injunctions whatsoever against this. And unless he got them from his father, he's pretty injunction-free in this area, which may explain why he can pretty calmly win. On the other hand, when he loses, he gets more upset than most of us, so there's got to be some emotional triggering there that's not perfect. I wouldn't want you to think that Tom was perfect, but his mother is pretty close to perfect. If your mother's alive, confront her, or your father, whoever was the most, confront her and say, "Hey, you're full of crap."
And then knock her down.
No, yeah, knock her down verbally. Say, "Look here, Mama, there's three, one, two, three, four, five, six payoffs, or seven. There's an exact race. Seven payoffs in that race. Seven payoffs, Mama. Now, somebody goes home with those seven payouts every damn race, every day of the week. Are you trying to tell me that... Now, you tell me who told you it was evil, Mama, and you're going to find out her mama told it was evil. And it goes back, and it's a vicious thing. If it cannot meet the validation, you know... Now, there are some good injunctions we got from my parents. If you persist in committing adultery when you're married, you're going to blow your marriage and hurt your kids. Now, that happens. Now, that's a truth. That does not go against logic. I've done it, and I'll tell you, it's tough. Hi, darling. She's coming. But all you got to do is look in the daily newspaper, and you see that somebody consistently, there's a pattern of people going away taking the money. You know from our statistics, which have been corroborated, that every day 5% of the people go away with 95% of the money after track take. You know that only 1% of them did it because they knew what they were doing. The other 4% of it was luck and tout sheets and this and that. So 1% of the people who go to the track win with a fair degree of consistency. How much might be just very little. They're taking that money. The parimutuel system tells you that winners are winning and losers are losing, and it tells you precisely the percentage. That is the nature of the parimutuel machine. It's a perfect form of democracy. Now, 0.1% of the people, which is about 5,800 people in North America, genuinely can be said to be making a living at the track. Maybe it's 6,000. It's pretty hard to see how many individual people there are. 58 million go through the turnstiles, but how many of those are different? If you say there are maybe 6 million different ones that go on a regular basis, you're talking about 6,000 people. Okay, that's a lot of people. That really is a lot of people, since only about 490 of them are ours. That just goes to show you that somebody's got a method which over 5,000 people are being able to win with without having come to one of these classes. Kind of hurts our feelings, but it's the truth. Now, those people have overcome this greatest of all problem that handicappers have. the reason that handicappers are fragile, the reason they are disloyal, that they're a last man's man, they listen to the last tip they get, they listen to the last, oh, I'm going to try that, is that they don't want to win. And every one of us knows in our hearts that if we stick to one thing and do it consistently, that we're bound to overcome the problem. You all know that. You've done it with your businesses, you've done it in life, you've done it in overcoming someone who didn't like you and you wanted to make them like you. You've overcome every other obstacle if you really wanted to. Has anybody who really had a goal didn't reach it? Or to some degree, I mean, if you wanted to be president and you didn't make it, maybe it's because you didn't run for office. That's the most important thing. If you want something, you've got to seek it, and you've got to seek it with absolute dedication. This is the toughest business in the world. This is tougher than brain surgery. This is tougher than psychiatry. It's tougher than internal medicine. It's a lot tougher than accounting and law. Everybody's a lawyer, which is nothing against lawyers. There are not that many good lawyers. This is a tough, precise business. There are fewer people who succeed at this business on a regular basis than in almost any profession I can think of, except Premier of Russia and President of the United States. There are fewer of them, thank God, than there are successful handicappers. But you've got to take the path and choose, and you've got to cleanse yourself. Is it all right? Remember that thing, I'm okay, you're okay? It's a trite term, but you've got to say, hey, it's okay for me to win. It's okay for me to say, Mama, you are going on bad evidence. And if she's alive, confront her. If she's not alive, talk to her. Talk to her within that part of that residue that's within you and say, hey, Mom, or look in the mirror and say, hey, you dummy, just because your mother was misled, are you going to be misled? Or your father, your great-aunt, or whoever it was, or your preacher, or priest, or rabbi. There is nothing evil about, if there's something evil about this, folks, there's something evil about the New York Stock Exchange and real estate. We got a bunch of real estate people. What is so noble about going out and peddling some land? It's just dirt, and you're getting thousands of dollars for it just because somebody wants it? And you don't think that's bad. Supposing that God had said, all dirt is the same. All dirt must go for a penny a pound. Mommy said it. Because dirt is dirt, and you must not sell dirt in California for more than you sell it in Arizona. Why, we wouldn't have any real estate dealers. Just think what would happen if the youth of today had any sense of music, musical values. We wouldn't have any guitars. It's all relative. Somebody said guitars are okay, and now what have we got? Guitars. There's a statistic that said if all the electrified guitar players in the United States were laid end to end, it'd be a damn good thing. This is actually the most important part. This stuff anybody can learn. What you have to do is this laughter. If you want, you ask me what the cure, what reparenting consists of? Laughter. If you can roll on the floor and laugh your head off at your silly reaction to probably an innocent, non-malicious act of conditioning, hey, parents have got to say something. How many of you are parents? And when the kid comes to you, you got to show you're better than he is. You got to show him you know more than he is. So you say, don't do this, kid, don't do that. How many of us tell our kids, do this, do that? Good for you. Most of us, we start off with a don't. I'm lucky. By God, it was good enough for me. My dad told me that I hated my dad, but he told me, but I learned a lot from him. By God, I got out when he beat me up in the wood pile. He taught me a lesson. He taught me how to beat you up in a wood pile, so you'll be able to beat up your kid in the wood pile. And there's absolutely no way to reason with a child, you just beat him. That's because nobody could reason with you, and they beat you, and it was went on for generations, and we carry it on. If you allow a lie to dominate your life, and you go out and make a fool of yourself and throw your money away because you believe a lie, then you got to look at yourself in the mirror and say, hey, that's as bad as alcoholism, that's as bad as narcotics addiction, that's as bad as whatever are the true sins. That is a sin to lose your money when you don't have to. And you can win. This is a very beatable game, and it's got a certain nobility to it. It's a certain nobility to it. This is the sport of kings. And it inherits a little bit of the crown when we win. Any specific questions? Reparenting is the best thing is laughter. If you can laugh at these injunctions and your reaction to them, you're well on the road. And character is loyalty to what you're doing, not to me, not to my method. I don't say that. But if you're going to do something, do it. Be loyal to it in yourself. Say, I'm going to lick this problem. If you don't like this one, buy something else. But to God, whatever you decide to do, do it. Because there's a lot of ways to win. A lot of ways to win. Mark Cramer's winning with something entirely different than this. Jimmy Quinn's winning with something entirely different from this. They're winning because they are dedicated to their own process, which they know is real. Jimmy Quinn thinks this is great, but he wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. He wouldn't steal it either, which I can't say for some of his friends.
To play 60-40 on the top two, are you better to
touch
it for a certain amount?
No, I'll tell you why.
There's a lot. I got written up in a Gambling Times this month about being good but not that good. Somebody else had a better way. Okay, whenever somebody tells you that their handicapping procedure for betting, not never mind the method, I'm talking about the betting, is better in the long run, they're right. But there is no long run for the average handicapper. Lose four times and you're opening the form and look and say, well, Mike Warren's got a new one. The man who said that it would be better to put most of your money on the high odds horse because in the long run it'll make you more money is writing articles. He's not betting at the track. Because how do you feel after four losses in a row? How do you feel when you didn't have any money on the 680 horse who came in first, and you had $48 on the 12-1 horse who's still running? The fact that that's a better proposition is meaningless because he didn't come in. It is better to win money on what is than to not win money on what will be in the long run. That's why we have tested. The 60-40 is designed not to demonstrate any genius as a money management man. It's demonstrated on a human reaction that I've encountered over the years. You show me a man who never lose more than three in a row. How many of you who have been with us have ever lost more than three in a row? Four in a row. How many have lost more than four in a row? Well, you don't count. No, you count. You count. Stand up. One guy has lost more than four in a row in this room. How long have you been with us?
Not using the numbers.
That's what I mean.
Oh, I mean, hey, I thought about the methodology.
No, I mean with this methodology. Okay, you don't have people who lose, generally speaking, three in a row is tops. Once in a while, four in a row. Now, that should give you security. But if you started doing that other thing, you started betting your high odds horse, you know, because it's better in the long run, you get 17 in a row and you're going to get mighty perturbed yourself. So there is no long run for most handicappers. They don't have the patience, and they shouldn't. That's masochism to go 17 races without a win. A guy wrote a thing, James Selvage, whatever, I think. He said right in print that all handicappers must expect cycles where they will lose 17 and 18 in a row. Now, Anybody who says that has got to be a sadist to impose that upon a masochist who'll accept it. There is just no damn reason in this world why anyone should lose more than four in a row if they are applying even moderate usage of this thing. There's nobody here who's lost more than four in a row.
And this is a group that's coming to learn.
Yeah. Two horses. It's with the teachers. How many have you lost in a row?
Recently, I haven't gone more than three. I know that. I don't think I've gone more than two in 6 months.
They got a place in
Patton for Tom if he ever went over two in a row. Lost two in a row for you? You lost two in a row at Del Mar? That's not bad. He's a provisional teaching member. That's what you can expect. Three. Every 48 races, you lose three in a row.
Weekend Warrior.
I'm doing the consulting work for Arco Van Lance, so I mean, it's really demanding, right? So I plan myself, especially coming from home, and I'll only be able to go on the weekend. You had mentioned in one of your texts to keep a model just on weekends, just for weekend classes.
At our tracks, that the weekend model, he's talking about a weekend model which will be slightly different, even at our tracks, from a weekday model. At Pomona, it won't be as noticeable because it's a fair meet, and every day's a weekend for them. Their karting on the weekend is not that much higher than during the week. They always have some pretty good races because it's a short meet. But generally speaking, at all tracks, this is especially true up north, your weekend races, and at the Northern California tracks, 7th through 9th race, 7th and 8th race, there's a demarcation, maybe starts at the 6th race, where you have a different energy pattern based on class. But if you're only playing weekends, you would be best to keep your model, of course, before the fact model, what you're playing weekends, and your wind energy model from weekends. It's going to be slightly different than the weekday. Not so much at Pomona.
The answer to that is be more selective in the type of races that you keep a working model. You know, like an easy thing to do, maybe two races a night, as opposed to.
Well, that
has to be your own personal thing. I play everything that on the board except maidens, and I play them even if there's no first time starter. I like volume. My wife only lets me out so often, and when I go, want to get all the races in I can. And when I play the races that Tom won't play, I don't play with as much money as he does, but I'll get my longer mutuals from these three-year-old races, which I like. I like three-year-old races. I think three-year-olds, if they're all running against other three-year-olds, they're all equally undependable, so the best, most dependable, the undependable usually wins. I've had, in my own handicapping, I cannot say that I do better with four-year-old allowance horses than I do with three-year-old claimers. I can make the same mistakes on both of them, or make the same errors in judgment, or the same brilliant insights. Hawthorne $3,500 claimers, that's the way to make your money. Oh, they pay off good. Tom talks about this being selective, but he goes out of town, he goes wild and wins them all.
About the wild part, I didn't know he won
them all. He wins just as well doing it as slipshod as he does, but he doesn't bet as much. Yes, sir.
So on the classifications up on the board there, you have 0.15, 0.25, 0.27. Do you have to take that any further?
Well,
now Tom's saying is he's where we said 20% gradation done. He's saying 0.15. But he's saying, hey, tailor it. Instead of making it 0.30, make it 0.27. Is it really going to kill you one way or the other? It's probably not going to make much difference. Instead of making it 0.45, make it 0.39. After the third run down, though, I would go the whole, wouldn't you,
Oh, sure.
Well, when you get blown.
When you're compensating for four levels, You've either got a horse dropping down that you really better be afraid of in terms of your own bet. I mean, that's just, that's damaged goods. If you got a horse coming up four levels, you probably didn't belong in your handicapping anyway.
Here's the thing. We encountered this in Omaha at our seminar. We taught them how to make the adjustments, as we did with you today. Now, the guy wants to take some horse that back here that has no business in the race and adjust it. Why is he wasting his time on a horse that's going to get a minus 0.75 adjustment and couldn't make it if you put him in raw? See, the big problem is people want to put horses into the computer. Well, why don't you put it, have one computer where you put everybody in? This is what Contender Scan does. You can put all the horses you want in. This is for those people who can't resist the urge to say, but yeah, but what if? The but what if will kill you. It's one of the questions that was asked over here today. Yeah, but if that had been a sprint, wouldn't you? Well, it wasn't a sprint. If that had been a sprint, the feel would have been entirely different. The structure, everything would. You've got to analyze what is, not yeah, but what if. The most thing I hear from losers is, yeah, but. Losers, a favorite word is, who do you like in yeah, but? There's a yeah, but for everything. Yeah, but. And we don't get it too much, and I'm proud of you people, believe me. Tom could tell you, I figured we're going to get yeah, but, because we used a turf line. And everybody, when you say yeah, but, that's after the fact. What if you'd have been there and you'd have been what I saw? I saw that horse go to the bathroom just before he, you know, think. Yeah, but you can yeah, but me to death. I can't answer you. All I know is that day in and day out that the figures analyzed as Tom took you through them today and that we contributed to will give you consistently a low of 60% with an 11-something mutual, I'll take it, and the highs of these people like Tom who play only three races a day, 80%, or like me, 68% and play everything that runs. It's style. It's what you want, what you can get along with. If you like to do what I do and collect some money on every race by seeing the place and show opportunities and you run back and forth those winners, you got a little something going. But if you're the guy that sits on his hands, say, I'm going to have this right down, that you've got to play within your style. Don't try to change your personality there. It's bad enough to ask you to repair it yourselves and to get accept winning, but whatever pleases you, do it. If you like to win show bet parlays for your wife, I do for her. She makes more money on the dollar spent than I do with show parlays. Going to make more gross money, but more ROI. Sir?
Are we doing away with a lot of this trip handicapping and track bias by interpreting the figures the way they are? We know more about the bias and the trips than the other people because they have a subjective evaluation of what it means.
I was the moderator of the trip handicapping seminar at the expo. They made me moderator because they didn't know anything about it. And my opening line was that I thought the trip handicapping was handicapping under the influence of narcotics. And I met the world's most famous trip handicappers. And I'm not quite sure that that satirical definition doesn't apply because you get the Michael Pozzola, one of our guys in New York, which we'll have him out here one of these times. He handicaps with Paul Mellis, Andy, when he's out there, and those people, and they're all sitting there and they're doing room today, and they're making these comments, and then they fight. They stand in front of the TV and they fight as to what each other has seen, and these are the intellects of the world, of our world. They fight over what they see. Hey, you want to make a trip handicapping? You can trip handicap right here. I can tell you, when I see a horse like the one Tom threw out who lost ground in the second fraction, I'm telling you, and he's never done it before. He always gains ground, and he lost it in that particular time. Then I'm telling you that they had a bad trip. I'm telling you that he got into trouble, whether it's in the racing form or not. If his deceleration pattern is to gain ground slowly, and all of a sudden I find he has a horrible second fraction. I'm telling you, he got in some trouble in the second fraction. It's a trip. It's there for you to see. Look at this horse, John's Tomorrow. John's Tomorrow on page 28.
That horse has a very regular pattern when he's running well. When he's not running well, you look at the distances. He only can run 6 furlongs. He dies at 7. He, up to the stretch, which is a 6 furlong call, at, he does very well, and he decelerates very gradually. He can't run a mile. Look what he did at a mile. A horrible second fraction and was dead thereafter. When he's in shape, he has a pattern. Now, when I see a sudden delineation from that pattern, well, this takes, he has a trouble line. Well, I'm telling you, he got in trouble, and it says in this case, the racing form says, but if he had a similar line to that, they didn't say, you know that he encountered trouble. The racing form is the best way to trip handicap from your positions and your beaten lengths and your times. A pace of the race, pace of the horse program will tell you, give you a perfect trip. And I don't know, if you're real good at it, then you can trip handicap, but we don't try it. Tom doesn't even try. He can tell you when a horse is going to be in trouble and a lot of things about it, but he does not depend on the binoculars and writing trip notes. I've never seen him do it. Because it's subjective. And well, why? All you have to do is wait for 2 days and you've got the trip right in front of you. Any other questions?
I forgot to ask Tom this. That is, Tom, on the early percentage you were talking within certain parameters. Now, within, say, 6 furlongs, you mentioned the top and the bottom. Do you get those top and bottom figures the same way that you do on a total energy? In other words, get high average amount of early percent for all 6 furlong races, and you go within those, or you have a program probably that picks out the high and the low, and then an average, right?
Every morning with the charts, I go through the previous day to make my variant, for one thing. But at the same time I'm making the variant, I take the win energy for each of those races,
right,
and I record that.
Right.
I sometimes average them, but even when I average it, I still look at the highs and the lows so that I can determine. If, for example, if I average Del Mar right now, it would average in around 52. But a lot of races have been won at 51.1 and 51.2 at 6 furlongs. And a lot have been run at 53. So if I say that the horse has to be at 52 or close to 52, I'm ignoring the fact that it took 51s and 53s to make 52.
Right.
Sometimes you can draw it that close. Like at Santa Anita Oak Tree during the sprints, you'll find that if you target 52.8 or 52.9% early in a sprint and use that single number and get close to it, you're fine. At Del Mar, you've got to establish the parameters. And it's from the results charts every day.
In
that green manual is
probably the best description of that.
In other words, you can easily do it because there's a, that has a sorting program, but only on the total energy. And the same thing, I suppose, could be happen with a sorting program if you did it with the early. You're talking about the early percentage.
I'm talking about early percentage because I don't use ultra scan, so total energy is a piece of my game anyway.
You'll find parameters in that yellow, that green manual. You got right.
You find parameters. Green manual, you're talking about the one from Albany? Or,
right.
Okay.
You'll find parameters even at Del Mar, which has the widest parameters we've encountered in the West Coast, I think.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Okay, you still find parameters.
All 51 and above 53.40, they don't, you know, there's still some horses we could have thrown out today, even with that wide parameter of early energy. And we could have, and they demonstrated that they weren't ready to win.
The turf course at Del Mar is the consistent one. But it's about 50.3 or 50.4 day in and day out. Yeah, once in a while, a little higher, a little lower. Yeah, and that's what I do. I do target that one specifically. The others, I work within a parameter.
Okay. And our generator program for ultra scan is the same thing that because I've looked at them, they can come out the same, but not total energy or something, and that's because of beat lengths or whatever is used.
Different formula.
Pardon?
Different formula.
I know it's different formula, but early percent is the same.
It'll vary a little.
Vary a little.
Anything specific after, hey.
Doc, if you would, after you've done all your numbers and everything, would you make any adjustment to the physical appearance of the animal when they come on the track? Let's say the horse, you got your number one AP horse and you look pretty good.
0.15 for a shiny coat.
Oh, you
probably are into that and probably have some validity. I don't. I am the worst body. I almost threw out a horse once. It was kidney sweating. And he was...
Glenn Schmidt was going to say something there.
I would have lost it. Heck of a place in exact if I had. So I gave up on the Bonnie Ledbetter there. Because I can't... Now, humans, I was trained in body language of humans. I tell you a lot about a human being from body language. But I can't tell you anything about a horse.
You know, don't try it. And it's easy to find out if you know or not. Simply get a notebook and write down all the horses that you would have thrown out and add up their winnings at the end of, say, 100 races.
I personally don't throw them out. I know a lot of people that do that throw a lot of winners out. I can't do that. It's all Washington.
It also depends if you go out and look. A couple years ago, if you went out to the track, you might see this scruffy-looking little dark horse out there. And you say, that sucker, look at these beautiful horses around him. He can't run, but then you throw out John Henry. Because he ain't a good-looking horse. And he's just as likely to try to bite you as anything else. And he's usually squabbling with his jockey. And you say, that horse can't run. That horse is nothing. If you don't know that that's his personality, and he loves to bite people and still run, well, that's...
We had a horse...
We were patch, yep. And we went with Flaherty was with us, and Purdy saw this horse, their tongue tying, was going crazy. Purdy said, I wouldn't bet that horse with your money. Well, I ran to the window and I naturally to bet it, and Flaherty said afterwards, I said, well, doesn't you know, Bob, that's the way that horse always acts before he wins. And Bob says, now you tell me, you mother.
The only member of our group that didn't have the horse, and he's also, coincidentally, the only member of our group that had gone to the Bonnie Ledbetter course, too. He no longer tries at all to identify that, and neither do I, and I'm just not a good judge of that at all.
In New York,
I tried to bet on the horse that was leading the horse that was in the race. He looked a lot better. And they said, you can't bet on that. That's called a lead horse. It's a lead horse. Well, he's going to be in the lead, then.
Incidentally, the horse I was talking about paid $20. Yeah, that's enough to teach Bobby. Even Bobby. Lesson.
No, I tell you, if you can do it, I don't think Bonnie can do it very well. Bonnie makes for 3 or 4 bets a year and $20 each. She knits it. I've talked to her. And she's a lovely lady. She's a lot of fun to be with. But gee whiz, if you can only make 3 or 4 bets a year. But if you can do it... we have a psychiatrist friend who does it very well, Dr. Milstein. He sees them when the horse is trying to pull away and tug away and trying to get ahead of the horses out of that line. And he sees certain qualities of dynamism that he says are paid off for him. But he doesn't go on the other... He just likes to see a horse that's eager to be where it is. That's the only thing he's ever contributed in body language that's been positive. Any other questions? We've kept you 4 minutes late. My wife seems to have collected all the money we're going to get. That's it.